You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
This week on Munchkinland, we're going to Gen Con again. Hi, everyone. It is Stephen Schleicher, and this week on the Munchkin Minute, we are going to talk about Gen Con, and we're joined by Samantha Nelson. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Sam, many of you know from our other show, Critical Hit, and also joining us this week, of course, is Brian.
Hello.
Brian's always here for Munchkinland. And Sam, you just got back from Gen Con. So I thought we would take some time today to go over just some things, some highlights of things that you saw, some highlights of things that we saw, and just kind of give a wrap-up of what we thought of the overall gaming convention. So let me just ask you, did you think attendance was up or down this year compared to years past?
Oh, I mean, it was definitely up. It goes up every single year. And I don't think this year was any exception. I believe last year they said that 69,000 people showed up, and this year the estimate was 75,000. So
wow.
It just continues to become just utterly take over the city of Indianapolis for 4 to 5 days.
Now then, because one of the nice things about Gen Con is not only are the companies there to show you what new games and tell you what new games they have, they also have demos. The demos are probably the biggest thing that's going on. Did the crowds hinder your access to a lot of games, or was it fairly easy to get access to some of the new big announced games?
Well, so that's the thing, is that if you want to sit down for some of the big announced games, you have to get there, like to be there at 10 a.m. when the hall opens, and then aggressively push your way through. There were some places that were taking appointments that were booked up as of Thursday when the con opened. And you could wait around for an hour to play some of the bigger release games. So unfortunately,
really?
I didn't get to play some of the things that were really exciting. But the other good thing about Gen Con is that it's a huge, huge hall. Mm-hmm. And so you can always just wander around and find lots of indie games, brand new games, things you hadn't heard of. And a lot of them are really fun.
Now, what do you think were, just from your observations, what were the big games that everyone was super interested in?
So Seafall, I was very interested in that. And from what I have heard, it sold out within the first 10 minutes of the convention hall opening, because Gen Con sells a few passes for what they call very important gamers. Mm-hmm. It's like a kind of a VIP class. You pay a premium, and one of the big perks of it is you get into the hall a little bit early. And apparently, I believe the very important gamers bought literally all of the copies of Seafall before anyone else had a chance to even try the game.
So what is Seafall about? Do you know about this, Brian?
Yeah, it's a new legacy board game, basically designed by like the guy that was ahead of both Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy.
Oh, okay.
So it's a Age of Sail exploration, basically a 4X game. What is that? Explore, exploit. I forget what the other 2 X's are.
Exterminate.
So, probably. But yeah, basically you start out with a mostly empty sea map, and you have stickers for islands to put into hexes as you go based on dice rolls. And yeah, you kind of build your continent and try to become the king of this empire.
Well, certainly with the pandemic one where you're putting the stickers down on your board and then they had the season 2, those are super popular. So I could see if this is the same creator behind that this would be something people would flood into. So was their booth, Sam, just basically empty, or were people upset that they weren't able to get a hold of the game, or what's the deal there?
Well, Plathead Games, the makers of Sea Fall also make Dead of Winter.
Oh, yeah.
And that's another very popular game. And they were also selling an expansion to Dead of Winter. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot more accessible. And something I didn't get to demo it, though a friend of mine bought it. And one of the great things about Gen Con is basically every single square inch of the city becomes open gaming space after the hall closes. You see people popping up and playing board games in restaurants, uh-huh. in their hotel lobbies, on the floor of the convention center all hours of the night. So we didn't get to try some of the new elements of it's called Dead of Winter, The Long Night, but they look really exciting. I'm hoping to try them soon. They add a lot of complexity. I don't know. Have either of you played Dead of Winter?
No, I own it and never got the opportunity to play it. And,
oh, you should remedy that. It's a great game.
I try. I even had Rodrigo sit down once and just partially going through the rules, and we got to junk management. He's like, nope, I'm out. Yeah. And it's like, ah.
But, it's a really cool little kind of zombie horror survival game. It's got like a little bit of a soap opera aspect to it, and each player's characters have their own backstory and personalities and things that come up. And the new expansion adds some other good post-apocalyptic elements. So there's a bandit camp where you'll nice. Sometimes get raided by bandits. And then there's also a evil corporation with super zombies. Wow. So I didn't get to play with either of those to see what the balance or the mechanics changes were like, but I look forward to trying them later.
Cool. You'd mentioned Pandemic a little bit ago. There's another game that was announced that Brad had put in some of our show notes saying, hey guys, if you get a chance, check this out. Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, where basically it's Pandemic and the basic Pandemic game, but instead of fighting zombies and whatnot, you're fighting 10 great old ones in this game, trying to stop them before they take over the world. It says it's a 2-4 player game, about 40 minutes for each play. Did you see anything about that, Sam? I know you were super busy, but
tables devoted to it. You know, Z-Man's booth always does really well. They were basically mostly playing that, and then this other game, I want to say it's called Junk Art, which looked like a really neat game too.
Oh, cool.
It was like a very like Jenga-like physical kinetic game. Hmm. Honestly, like I was curious about Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, but if I want to play that scenario, I already have Eldritch Horror,
right,
so
true.
That didn't really appeal to me that much, though I did play a different Cthulhu-focused game.
I definitely want to hear about this because I am a Kickstarter backer of Cthulhu the Deck Building Game.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Well, yeah.
It was really nice. Neat. The Wyvern Gaming, they did a great job with their booth. I talked to the designer a little bit while I was there, and apparently they Gen Con offered to like rent them a booth for $10,000.
Oh, my.
Like, how about I just spend lots and lots of my time and $1,500 and build a booth that looks better than any of the other booths at the con? Like, it was gorgeous. Like, this whole, like, dark wood, rustic, you know, very almost like Victorian era decor.
Oh, very cool.
And then I got to sit down and play this game, which was, have you played Ascension at all?
I have not. Have you played that?
A bit. Just on the app online.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ascension's a deck building game, and one of the things that's a little different from, I guess one of the things that's different, very much different about Cthulhu, the deck building game, unlike most deck building games I played, is that it's fully collaborative rather than competitive.
Oh, nice.
Right.
And like Ascension, though, you have different cards that are going to be in the center, and some of them are items that you can buy with Moxie, which is your resource of choice. And then nice. There are also enemies that are basically monsters spawned by the deep old one or great old one that you're fighting. And then you have to fight them every round or they do awful, awful things to you. And then there are various mythos cards that are like kind of area of effect things and then environmental effects that do things like increase the effectiveness of your spells, which is sort of a good thing, sort of a bad thing, since obviously most of your spells cost sanity as well as producing some effect.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really liked about it is that there seemed to be a lot of different characters and a lot of different great old ones and a lot of customizability for upping the difficulty. So you can just either add in extra great old ones or have extra mythos cards played every turn. So you can really kind of customize it to whatever your gaming group is up for.
Now, I know these guys have been busy since about mid-July. They said that's when everything was being shipped out to their distribution centers and everything, and or at least was on the boat to the distribution centers. And then I figured they were probably very busy with Gen Con, but had they given any updates on when this was shipping or if any other gaming company had picked up any interest in this Cthulhu the Deck Building game?
Yes, they did, actually. They said that they're currently in talks to be purchased by Asmodee.
Excellent.
So that would be pretty huge for them.
Yeah.
They were currently selling the game only at Gen Con, but they said that they're hoping to work things out with Asmodee to do a larger distribution.
Well, nice. I hope so. I can't wait to get this. Like I said, this was, I don't know, Brian, maybe back in January when this kicked off, and it was a time where it was right around the same time we were playing all the other Cthulhu games with Brad, and this popped up, and I was like, it's a deck-building game. Deck-building games are super popular, so therefore, I better grab onto this now because it's combining two of my favorite things, deck-building games and Cthulhu together, and we get this. Now, there were a couple, maybe one of our favorite deck-building games here at Major Spoilers is the Legendary series, the Marvel Legendary stuff. And there are two Legendary games that have been announced, and I believe they were demoed at a Gen Con, both from Upper Deck. Legendary Big Trouble in Little China, which I'm dying to get my hands on this. It's supposed to come out in August, sometime this month.
Yeah. I immediately thought of you when I saw that. Yeah.
Any updates from Upper Deck at all, Sam? Do you know?
Honestly, I didn't see them at all. Okay. I didn't get over to their booth at all during the con.
Go ahead.
I did see one announcement of a Legendary game coming out next year.
Which is?
Buffy.
Oh yeah, that's right. Legendary Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There's also Legendary Encounters, the Firefly deck building game.
They're getting the Whedon all up in there.
We're getting the Whedon all up in there.
Yes.
I'm just super excited about both these games. Apparently, the Firefly and Big Trouble in Little China are both supposed to drop in August this month of 2016. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we can get those fairly soon. But I'm guessing this, Sam, was probably one of the booths that was packed with people that you couldn't get in to do any demos on.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I mean, basically everywhere if you had more persistence, but it's 4 days seems like a lot of time. And yet the limiting factor is definitely time versus games.
Well, for me, it's like if there's a big, and this is my problem when I went to the San Diego Comic-Con, is that, yes, I really want that little Lego exclusive that they're giving away, but I'm not going to wait 3 hours in line for that little exclusive. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe. But anything that goes longer than that, and especially, as you said, if you've got 4+ days of gaming that you want to do, and there's a, hey, we're taking appointments for Sunday, and it's Thursday, then that's something that's like, well, sorry, I'm not going to be able to play your game, but if you have any print material or something you'd like to give, then I'll certainly take that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when you think about it, it's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes doesn't sound like a lot of time but when you could be standing around waiting to sit down at a table, or you could literally walk around the corner and play a whole game in that amount of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I definitely played some games that were just like, here's a 15-minute demo. And I was like, wow, that was great. I'm really happy I played that, as opposed to standing around waiting for something else.
Well, that's one of the nice things about like Love Letter. It's like a super fast, quick game. So what were the super fast, quick games that you were able to play?
One that I played that was really fun was called Goblin's Breakfast. It was just released at Gen Con. It was just a really cute game. And again, super fast. Basically, it's the game, everyone plays a goblin, and your goal is to be the biggest, strongest, toughest goblin you can. And to do that, you need to eat a lot of food. But breakfast is a competitive sport in Goblindom. So it reminded me a little bit of like almost like a Red Dragon Inn sort of scenario, in that you have like a center deck, and then there's five cards that are flipped in the center at every turn. And on your turn, you can either use a card in front of you or take a card from the center. And so in the center, you'll have things that are like food, and each food is worth a certain amount of points at the end of the game, depending on how big or filling it is. And then there's lots of weapons, which you can use to smack someone next to you to steal their food. And then there's like special actions like gut punch, which is they make someone basically vomit up their food. So even if they'd already eaten their food, they have to put it in the discard pile, and lots of like goofy little elements like that. So really fast, really simple to learn. You could play with your kids. I think it would be a good opportunity for that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely sounds like a fun game. Do you know a release date or the company or pricing or anything like that?
So it's got Midnight Campaign Games. I don't, you know, they had the successful Kickstarter and they were releasing two different versions of the game. One that was like the standard, and then there was a special fancy breakfast that included some special bonuses they did from the Kickstarter. They released it at Gen Con, so it should be somewhat generally available now, but in back order.
That's pretty cool. Now, there were a lot of board games too that were either announced or that people were demoed. Some of the ones that I saw that look kind of interesting, Arkham Horror, it's a card game. Yeah. But I think there's still a lot of chip components with it, too.
It's a living card game. So okay.
This is just the Cthulhu card game rebranded, right?
No, because this is a cooperative game.
Oh, as opposed to
the competitive one that the Call of Cthulhu living card game was.
Okay. So, is this look like anything fun, Brian? Have you had any time to go into depth on that at all?
Not too much in depth, but I am definitely interested. I always been a fan of Arkham Horror and Eldritch Horror, and we've got to play that a time or two. And I'm be interested to see how this works out. It apparently follows a familiar scheme from the Lord of the Rings card game.
Okay.
Because that was also a cooperative game where you had to defeat like the story deck or whatever.
Huh. Okay. So, well, then I'm kind of interested in this maybe a little bit more, because when I first read it, I was like, this sounds, and we wrote an article about it up on the Major Spoilers website, and I was like, this sounds exactly like the Call of Cthulhu card game
that they just ended,
yes. And then they're bringing it back because there's a twist in that there is a story campaign mode into it. And so I didn't know if anybody had a chance to see that, but I'm assuming that, Sam, anything Cthulhu related was probably a big deal or not. I mean, Cthulhu has been a big deal in gaming probably for the last, maybe decade.
Mm-hmm.
Does it show any signs of dropping or anything like that? Do you know?
I mean, like I said, I wouldn't say so, seeing as Cthulhu, the deck building game, was being released at Gen Con and has already been, you know, getting picked up possibly.
Right.
And, you know, Z-Man was releasing their own Cthulhu games. So I think as long as there are people who love horror playing board games, people are going to want to be making new spins on that. You know, Fantasy Flight, they do a great job with most of their games. So I didn't have a chance to try actually any of their new games at the con, but I'm looking forward to checking this out for sure. I love Arkham Horror. I love Eldritch Horror. And I love their Game of Thrones living card game. So I'm very interested in seeing more.
The other one that I found very fascinating was also from Fantasy Flight was Doom the board game, which kind of from what I look like is it's basically let's take the video game and let's figure out how to make it into a board game format. That is kind of building kind of a little bit like the Dungeons and Dragons game where you're building out your map as you go.
This actually isn't the first time they've done Doom as a board game.
Oh, really?
And the old one was very similarly done. This does not look like a straight up reprint.
Mm-hmm.
The dice seem different. So they're taking the experiences that they've had, I assume, from making Doom, which helped influence their Descent, their dungeon crawl.
Yeah, yeah.
Board game, and then they also, I believe, reincorporated those mechanics into the Gears of War board game as well. So this seems to be a new iteration on that, but yeah, it's largely you're running through a maze and blasting monsters, and yeah, you have tiles to actually build the map and
that's
play
cool
from there.
It looks cool. I mean, it's totally, I guess it's kind of weird to try to wrap your head around going from a video game where you're blowing crap up to going into a cooperative board game like this. But it should be fun and interesting. If I'm not mistaken, they also announced a Star Trek RPG game at Gen Con, or at least a few days before.
That was actually announced before that. That's actually coming from Modiphius Games, using the 2D20 system, the system that they used for their Conan and the John Carter of Mars RPGs.
Apparently they were giving away miniatures. You could get either, I think it was a Spock or a Kirk miniature to go with it. Maybe some exclusive stuff there. Sam, what did you notice? What's another board game, or what was another big popular game that people were just crowding around at the show?
You know, I again didn't get to play this myself, but I know that Scythe was a really another big, very popular release. It's a some friend of mine got to play it and said like the flavor was amazing. It's basically an alternate 1920s war mechs in Soviet Russia, I want to say. So it sounded totally insane. I know that was another popular one.
And what? This is an RPG game?
No, it's a board game.
Oh, it's a board game? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Because you said mafia and Russia and all this stuff. It's like, what is this? What?
It's War Mechs. No, I didn't. And like, it's kind of like a steampunk mecha. 19.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's like apparently like a resource gathering world or a community building kind of game, I understand. I mean, you can fight your other people, but I don't know. I haven't looked in too much to it, so I'm not sure.
Interesting.
But I believe farming's a big part of the mechanics.
Interesting. Sam, what's another game that you're playing? What is Thieves Market?
Oh, Thieves Market was really neat. So it was by... Oh, I'm having some echoing.
You might be. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Just making sure. Sorry.
Okay.
It wasn't an issue. All right. So Thieves Market is really neat. It's a dice game that was basically about being exactly the right amount of greedy, which is a fun kind of thing to try. It's the concept is that you're a bunch of thieves and you're stealing things and then trying to sell them at various pawnbrokers and things like that. So the way it plays is that there's a pool of dice and every round one person rolls the dice and puts them all in the center. And then each turn you get to pick a number of dice. Like you can take any number of dice from the center as your dice, or you can steal all of someone else's dice and put at least one back in the center. So the idea is if there's say seven dice, you could roll all the dice if you're the first player and then steal all the dice from the center. Obviously, no one's going to allow that because then they won't have any dice. So then someone's just going to steal all your dice. So you want to have like a pool of dice that's in front of you that is good for what you want, but not so obviously appealing that everyone's going to try to steal it from you. And then each die has different symbols that are basically different kinds of resources, different colored gems, which you can use to buy things that do special abilities. So one thing might let you convert, say, a red gem into gold, which you can use as kind of a wild card gem. And then other things let you buy more than one card. And then the cards are worth victory points at the end of the game. So, and then some of the dice are just worth victory points. So those are always very popular to steal out of the middle or steal from other people.
Cool. Another game that I think we're also excited about here is the new expansion for Smash Up. Mm-hmm. It's Smash Up Cease and Desist. And we know what the four new factions are. Do you know what they are, Brian?
I know there's the Inglorious Ignobles, the, what do they call them, Space Knights?
Let's see, Astronauts.
The...
Changerbots.
Changerbots and the Space...
Star Roamers. So we get Star Trek, Star Wars, Transformers, and Game of Thrones in this next expansion, which is available, I want to say, now? For some reason, I want to say it's out either now or coming out in September. So I'm pretty excited about that. That will be a lot of fun. And I'm sure a lot of people were crowding around it because I know it was for sale up at at Gen Con. So a lot of people were probably crowded around, what is that, AEG's booth. Yeah. And also, there was maybe a little news about the video game of Smash Up, the iPad version coming out soon.
Yeah, I heard that too. I haven't looked into that.
No, but that is something that I'm looking forward to. And Sam, what about what's another game that just seemed too crowded to get access to?
So one game I really wanted to play, but I could never find a spot at, was the new Path.
Oh no.
I love the Pathfinder Adventure card game. I played through all of both the original Rise of the Rune Lords and we're actually in the midst of a Wrath of the Righteous campaign currently. And I think it's a great game. And each time they seem to like learn from it and add in new mechanics and very interesting characters. And so I was very curious to see what they do with Mummy's Mask, but I wait until October.
October for that. And that is what, the horror adventure one?
Mummy's Mask is actually sort of a ancient Egypt
theme.
Okay. So, although I believe that there is some horror themes to it, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I'm worried that if I start guessing, I'm going to mix it up with the Pathfinder role-playing game.
Oh, right. Okay. That's what I was flipped around on, because yeah, there is the card game, which I think out a little bit on, and then there's the RPG, which
so
is the
that
horror
is something
adventure.
I did get to take a look at, which is the Pathfinder for their RPG released a new book called Horror Adventures, which is, speaking of the popularity of Cthulhu in games, basically their way to turn your Pathfinder game into a Call of Cthulhu game, which is incredibly unsurprising since the folks at Paizo have always been really fascinated by mythos and elder horrors and deep ones and things like that. Mm-hmm. So this is a way to actually produce systems for having your players lose their mind and slowly turn into monsters.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, man, I think we need to play some Pathfinder at some point.
Oh, I would love that. I actually played in a Pathfinder tournament at Gen Con, and it was great time.
This year?
Yeah, well, I did it for the first time last year with a crew of my friends, and we did it again this year and actually wound up winning the whole tournament.
Really? So yeah. how does this work? I mean, how do you play Pathfinder and RPG in a competitive manner?
The way it starts is that you have, in this case, it was 10 different groups of five players, and each of them sits down at a different table with a different DM, and they all run through the same exact scenario with the same exact five pre-generated characters. And then you're kind of graded throughout at the end of the scenario based on the goals that you had. So it's like, how well did you achieve each combat? How well did you do at every social situation or skill challenge? And you're ranked in terms of points for those. So if you, like, say someone dies in a combat, that's you lose points. Or if you fail as key skill check, you lose points. At the end of the game, then each DM gets together and they also talk about how well everyone role played and what creative solutions people came up with for their various problems, and vote on four teams to advance to the final round. And then they play a second scenario with the same characters. And then each they are ranked. According to the same system.
Wow. And did that take like a whole day to do that?
Yeah, so each session was 5 hours.
Wow.
So
okay.
That was a lot of my con, but well worth it.
Yeah. So you just went knowing that, hey, one of these days is just going to be spent.
It was 5 hours one day and 5 hours the other day.
Oh, okay.
Day, which
okay.
Was also good for the DMs because it gave them some time to like tweak things that needed to, like, our characters leveled up between the first day and the second day. So they needed to like print out new character sheets to incorporate that.
Now, Brad had asked some questions, left some questions. He wasn't able to be here this week, but he was interested in how was the game mastering this year? Was it done well?
So I only play in two different RPGs, which is the Pathfinder tournament, and then also this other insane role-playing game thing that I do every year called The Rising, which is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most fun things to do at Gen Con,
okay.
Which is zombie fighting buffer LARP.
Wow. LARPing.
Which, yeah, I know. It's.
I mean,
it's,
I'm not...
On the hierarchy of nerddom, it is the absolute lowest. Everyone else should be able to make fun of me.
No,
I
it's
have
not.
No regrets.
I'm not. I didn't mean that to sound like I was making fun of you. It's just like, I mean, LARPing just seems like something that, again, takes up a lot of time, and you have to really kind of get ready for it in a number of different ways. I mean, you just don't show up in your street clothes.
The good thing about this one is it's. For the actual LARP, and you're right, you don't show up in your street clothes, but you kind of know what you're getting into, which is fighting some zombies. So we go back to our, like, we take some time, go back to our hotel rooms, change up, and come, because your armor, like your health levels for fighting zombies, is determined by what you are actually wearing. Give you extra points if you show up in boots, you know, wearing like a jacket, wearing pants, as opposed to if you're, you know, wearing the shorts and flip-flops I wear most of the con.
It sounds super fascinating and exciting. It's just like when I think of conventions, I don't think of, and this is the thing that, because I've not been to Gen Con, trying to wrap my head around, hey, I need to block out 5 hours on these 2 days so I can go play Pathfinder. Yes, there's a lot of other cool games over there going on, but I want to do Pathfinder, and then I'm going again specifically to do this LARPing event. And I'm guessing you've done this for a couple of years, right? Specific one, The Rising?
Yeah, I've been doing The Rising since, I want to say, 2010.
Wow,
and, my friends and I, you get to level up your characters every year you go, if you survive.
Yeah. Now, is this only run at Gen Con, or is this Vampire LARP where you have a national database of players and their levels and everything?
You know, so the group that runs this is based in, I want to say, Missouri. Mm-hmm. So I think they must run some local events there. But as far as I've looked into it, and there's no events anywhere near me for this. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely one of those only a Gen Con things. And that's one other thing that's great about Gen Con, because as much as I might want to playtest games, which I always do, there are certainly experiences that you can absolutely only do at Gen Con. And a lot of those are your kind of live action crazinesses and that take a lot of time and money and setup.
Yeah, no, it sounds fascinating. I mean, I was listening to one person today. She was talking about, she went to Gen Con, didn't even get to the convention floor because she was too busy running around doing Pokemon Go the entire weekend.
There was a lot of that. So I'm playing Pokemon Go. Most of my friends are playing Pokemon Go. And for whatever reason, downtown Indianapolis was like a all-you-can-eat Pokemon buffet.
Oh, yeah.
Like the entire city was just covered in Pokestops and rare Pokemon. And so like everywhere you looked, there were people catching Pokemon all weekend.
And I'm sure any game store, video board, comic book store, I'm sure they were all throwing lures out trying to get people to come to their location.
The entire city downtown area was basically lured. Like there were, you know, every hotel, every restaurant that was a Pokestop was now, lured almost the entire time.
Are you a Pokemon Go or a Pokemon No?
Oh, I'm a Pokemon Go.
My son just got his first legendary this weekend. What is it? The Arachnine or whatever? Arcanine? Arcanine is what he got. So he was pretty excited about getting that here. But did you have time to do any Pokemon Go while you were there at the show?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about Pokemon Go is you could play it on the go. So,
hatch a lot of eggs, right?
Huh?
At least hatch a lot of eggs running around the show floor.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I was hatching eggs. I was catching Pokemon while waiting for line at the food trucks, you know, to get some food or sitting down to grab a drink or, you know, before I went to bed, that kind of thing. It's a nice little way to decompress.
Very cool. Brian, how are you on Pokemon Go? Or are you a Pokemon No?
I'm Pokemon meh.
Pokemon whenever I get around to it kind of thing?
Pretty much. Yeah. I'm just in it for the collecting. I've never even bothered to try to fight a gym.
No, I haven't done that either. So yeah. What was another game that you were excited about coming out of Gen Con, Brian?
Oh, let me see here. There was quite a few. We already mentioned.
What is Fallen Land?
Fallen Lands. That's actually one I kind of just put on the list just to see if we could get any news about it, because it is kickstarting right now.
Oh, okay.
And I have already went ahead and backed it there. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, you know, on their Facebook page that they are there at Gen Cons doing little demos, basically just of, you know, just showing you how the encounter system works. Because this is a competitive board game set in like a post-apocalyptic United States of America. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own separate faction. And so it's a bit of a non-symmetrical board game where you're trying to build up your community, mm-hmm. and trying to claim all the resources for your group. And so, yeah, you have to send your party out into the wasteland to try to explore and gather resources to increase the community. And it just seems neat and fun and fairly Fallout like. But
that sounds cool.
Yeah, I think it looks neat. So, yeah, I'm probably going to get it and see, hopefully, if it's any fun.
Well, one game that I have been dying to find out more about, I've seen a couple of the videos played. There's a print and play that's mm-hmm. a pretty light version of the game. One Deck Dungeon was finally at Gen Con. This is one put out by Asmadi Games, I think it is, A-S-M-A-D-I.
Not to be confused with Asmodee.
No, totally different because it's got an A instead of an O. Mm-hmm. But they finally have pre-orders open on One Deck Dungeon. And mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone saw this, if they were even at the show, or Sam, if this was even on your radar. I know I've.
I saw Asmodee's booth, but I actually didn't show up, like, visit there at all, so I couldn't have said anything.
Yeah, I've been trying to convince these other guys that, man, this looks like a really cool game, and they're like, we've never heard anything about this, Steve, and I'm sorry. And I'm, like, looking all over for it and finally stumble upon it.
Well, you didn't know the name for the longest time.
Well, because it kind of has One Deck Dungeon sounds a lot like Boss Monster.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like
a Boss Monster and, like, Descent having a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it was really hard to...
Keep asking us about this game and just like, oh, you send adventures through it and see how far they can go. Are you sure you're not talking about Boss Monster?
I'm like, I've got Boss Monster. But yeah, because at number one, it was never heavily promoted. And I only stumbled across it in the middle of the night one night when this guy popped online on either Twitch or YouTube Live or something, where he was just up and he was demoing it. And that's where I finally found out where they had the print and play and found the company website and everything. It just sounds fascinating. I'm very looking forward to that. It's supposed to come out sometime in the next month or so. It's a summer of 2016. Brian, your Kickstarter is not coming out till May of 2017.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before it's actually in my grubby hands. But yeah, I mean, I am a fan of roguelike board games. So yeah, when you get that, I'll definitely be willing to try it with you.
Yep, I want to try it because I think that one can be played with one or two people at the same time, not just a single person. Another one that looked like it was very popular was Batman Dice Game from Cryptozoic. It's coming out in November of 2016. I don't know much about it except that it's a dice game and it features Batman. It kind of looks like, to be honest, it kind of has a feel like
zombie dice,
because you are the villains trying to escape and you're rolling dice, and depending on, you know, what Batmans or whatever that you roll, your Batmans are counted like your gunshots. And if you get three of those, then you're out your turn. And I guess it's the first one who gets to a certain level is the winner of the game. At least that's what it kind of looks like from everything that I've seen. So, and looking at some of the dice and stuff, it's supposed to come out in November. It's from Cryptozoic and Steve Jackson Games. So it's definitely something that will be on my buy list.
An interesting joint there. Yeah, just looking at the page you link, it seems interesting because apparently you're trying to be a supervillain and just avoid the bat for as long as possible.
Right. So you would get some money bags or you'd get something else. And then the more bats you have, that's the equivalent of your shotgun. So it's a great concept if they pull it off effectively. And I did see, of course, I follow Steve Jackson Games on Twitter, SJ Games. And there were a lot of pictures of that showing up all over from Gen Con. Sam, did you have a chance? Did you ever see the Bill and Ted's Excellent Board Game?
I didn't see that at all.
Okay. Do you know anything about it, Brian? I know it's available now. It's out now. It's got some weird mechanics where it's like you're shifting, depending on your dice roll, you're shifting your characters all over the board, backwards and forwards and left and right.
Nice.
I've seen a demo of it. I don't know if I was super thrilled by it or not, but it looks interesting, I suppose, if you're a Bill and Ted fan or if you're a time travel fan. But it's certainly a kind of a weirdish board game as you try to collect all of these heroes through history, which are scattered on the board game. And as you roll your dice, you're trying to maneuver so you can go and collect them in your phone booth.
Neat.
Yeah. Any word on the Munchkin CCG, Brian?
I did not think that they actually had anything going on at Gen Con. That's why I kind of put it there with a question mark.
Okay.
Because I didn't think there was any new news there. I kind of checked out the game designer's Twitter to see if he was doing any demos or anything. Mm-hmm. But no, he's like a pretty big freelancer, so he is demoing for all kinds of other games from other companies.
Okay. And we've been playing these Munchkin. We've been playing the Marvel Munchkin game. Munchkin Marvel 2, the Mystic Mayhem pack, is supposed to be coming out. I don't know when that's coming out. It says it's a pre-order available now, or pre-order now, but it says it was released at Gen Con, so I don't know if anybody was able to get their hands on that. We should have just sent you with a bunch of money, Sam, to say, here, buy this for us.
I mean, if you want to do that for me next year,
I think I definitely will, because I should have just said, Sam, here's like $1,000. Here's all the games I want you to get.
I will take you up on that.
I will get you two games.
Yeah, that's probably right? $1,000 and only two games. What is Oceanos?
So Oceanos was actually my favorite game that I played at the con. It was just this really simple, really pretty game. You know, Yellow, they're mostly known for their King of Tokyo series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh. Nice.
So this is a new game by them, and it sold out at the con. It's not actually going to be generally available until fall.
Oh.
But I got to play it.
I have seen this game. this looks like a lot of fun.
It was so fun, and the art is great. So basically, you're playing, each player has a submarine, and they're trying to explore the depths and look for sea creatures and treasure and coral while trying to avoid the attention of a kraken. And so it's kind of a bit of a drafting game, a little bit like, but then kind of a little like Ticket to Ride too, in that you're laying out a line of things. So each turn you get a hand of a certain number of cards that depends on how much you've upgraded your submarine, as upgrading your submarine is another very key element. And there's lots of different pieces to your submarine that are represented by different tiles you slot in depending on how much you've upgraded it. And you then get some number of cards that you get to choose between. And there are some ways that you can play extra cards. But basically, you're creating this line that's your sea experience. And you're cataloging adorably drawn little animals. Yeah. So there's like a hammerhead shark with like a dapper top hat and a cane. And like a crab that was wearing a hook claw in one of his hands. Like really, really cute stuff. And then you get points for how many animals you see, how many treasure chests you can deploy divers to, and there's a lot of strategy involving like when you deploy your divers. It's because you have to decide when the best point in the game is, and there's like a lot of very valid different ways to win the game. So it's one of those, another great example of a game that's strategic enough for adults to enjoy it and simple enough for kids to pick up on it.
Yeah, it's tagged 8+, and it looked, the demo that I saw looks super easy. It looks really fun, and you're right, that depending on how you deploy your divers or how you deploy certain things as you build up your submarine or as you travel through the ocean on each of the different rounds, it sounds like it can be challenging as well. This is from Aiello, is the company. It says it's about 40 minutes to play, 2 to 5 players. It comes out, the pre-release was at Gen Con. You can buy it online starting on September 8th. That is definitely one that I think will find a way here into our house, maybe as a family game night stuff. It is a $40 game, a lot of little cool pieces. And as you said, Sam, the art is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was one of those games where we, you know, it was, they were demoing it, and I think they only wanted everyone to play like a few rounds, and we sat down and played the whole game, like our table of 6 players, because we were all having so much fun.
Was there a lot of open gaming space at the convention, or just the gaming tables that were set up for the demos? Because that was one of the problems that Brad had said last year, was that he went to the show and there was no open gaming space. Everybody, the space was all used up by vendors. Or you had to go, you know, as you said earlier, going to bars or restaurants or whatever to play games.
So, I mean, I have never had a problem with a Gen Con with finding space to game. There are large rooms that are run by various gaming companies. And so technically you're supposed to play like their games while you're playing there. And I did have some friends that said they got kicked out of the Mayfair room for playing to play a non-Mayfair game there.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, there are so many hotels adjacent to the convention hall. There's so many different rooms that, you know, whenever we wanted to find a gaming space, we never seemed to have an issue. And there's also I assume it was there this year. I didn't make it there at all, but there's typically a board games library where they have thousands and thousands and thousands of different board games, and you can use some generic tickets to rent a board game for a certain amount of time and sit down and play it.
Oh, that's cool. I like that idea. Certainly, that's what we do at Nerdtacular. And hopefully, you know, for those of you who are interested in Nerdtacular, be on the lookout because a formal date is coming up. My guess is Nerdtacular 2017. It's right now, tentatively, the last week in June. And certainly beyond just going out there and joining everyone on the Frog Pants Network and hanging out with them, Matthew Bach, who contributes stuff to the website, he's been on a couple of our shows. He's a really super guy. He generally trucks out a ton of board games out to Nerdtacular and has basically a whole room where he's just like, hey, play whatever you want. And it's a lot of fun to do that. Sam, what is probably the most favorite game that you played at the show?
So I'd say Oceanus was my favorite, but a second favorite would probably be Seven Ronin, was put out by Gray Fox Games. I played, it's funny because my favorite game of the show last year was another game of theirs, London Dread, which they were previewing and then did a full release this year, which was a really cool narrative horror game. But this year, Seven Ronin was their new game, and it's a asymmetrical two-player game. And it's really cool to find a good two-player competitive game that just works. Mm-hmm. And the concept of this is that one player is the Seven Ronin, and their job is to protect a town from 40 ninja.
Oh, okay.
And the other player is 40 ninja. And so every turn you have like a little map of your town and your opponent has a little map of the town and you have a screen. And the Ronin place their Ronin and the ninja place their ninja. And then you reveal where you've made your placements. And then things happen depending on who's where. So if like, say, there's some Ronin who have special abilities, they can only happen if they are not in a square with ninja. So there's the healer who can heal your other Ronin, which is super necessary because they're under a constant ninja assault. But he can only do it if he's not under attack personally. But whereas there's other Ronin that are just like big and tough and kill ninjas and they want to actually be where the ninja are. So it's this kind of double thinky game of, well, yeah, where are they going to go? Because they're also the ninjas want to occupy different territories in town so that they get special abilities, like getting more ninja or injuring the Ronin. And so you have to try to outthink each other.
Very cool. Now, this
sounds neat.
This is on pre-order now. It's a two-player game. It says 15 to 30 minutes. Pre-order now for $29.99. Is this something that you will be pre-ordering, Sam?
I think so. It's, you know, I sat down and played it with my husband, and it's always really nice to have a kind of quick game that we can play together, especially if we're like setting up for a larger game day when other people are coming and we want to have something to do in the meantime.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm looking at Oceanus again. It's just like, yeah, this game looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great.
And then, of course, the Kraken.
I would have brought it home if they hadn't sold out before I had a chance.
Yeah, it's real funny because the Kraken grows on each round or something like that. Yeah. So it starts out as up on the first level, it starts out as a little squidling, a little thing. Mm-hmm. And then as you go deeper and down into the game, it grows into a full-size Kraken.
Nice.
Which, again, looks really cool.
Yeah, I just like the constructible sub thing.
I love the little slotting in different things for your sub. Like, there's the periscope that determines how many cards you get each round. And I just love it starts off with a conventional submarine with one periscope, and eventually you can have three periscopes because that's better.
Three is always better than one, right? Castle of Blackthorn. What is this?
Council of Blackthorn.
Oh, Council of Blackthorn.
It's a Great Northern Games plotted out, and it was just released to GenCon. In fact, apparently I spoke to the developers. They said that they were panicking because their shipment came in so late. They were worried they weren't going to be able to get it on the truck onto GenCon.
Oh man!
But it was a very like reminiscent of, if you like Game of Thrones, I think you'd like this game. You're basically members of the king's small council, all plotting for favor with the king and the various forces in the realm. So that includes like favor with the guilds or with the nobles or with the military. And you take turns playing various cards that give you favor and other special abilities that you use to try to sabotage your opponents. My favorite mechanic of this by far was that every character gets treason cards, and they're, you know, you never want these treason cards, and there are various ways you could pass them on to others and try to get rid of them. And when I was talking to the developers about it, I was like, so are they worth negative points at the end of the game? And they said, no, the person with the most points of treason cards at the end of the game is beheaded by the king and loses.
Oh, no.
Nice.
Which I just love. Because so many games, it's like, so sometimes people can get so far ahead that you can feel like totally useless in the last few turns. Mm-hmm. And this is just a way to kind of utterly avoid that problem.
Did you see any first-time companies there besides the Wyvern Gaming with their deck building game? Did you see any like first timers there that were showing off anything exciting or?
I believe Aegis was another first time game company by Greenbrier Games.
Oh, okay.
That was another kind of like labor of love, originally self published and now out in like a wider distribution.
And what is it about?
It was a really neat little game. It's basically about fighting. And I think the designer described it as Voltron meets Pokemon. These like adorable little robots, and they each have their own special abilities, and each of them stands for a letter in Aegis. So it's like Assault is A, and I think G is Guardian, and S is Support. And they run around and do their own things, but eventually you want to fuse them all up into super robots because your opponent will also be fusing their robots into super robots. And it's a tactical miniatures army building game. And so we played with some preset things, but I could see like tons and tons of opportunities for customizability based on your strategies, because you don't have to have each type of robot represented, but really cute art, really cool, lots of diverse abilities, things that like, you know, do area of effect damage when they fuse up, or things that heal each other, or things that have really high long range or can shoot over terrain. So, you know, good for people who like that sort of thing, but a lot easier to get into to something as complicated as, say, Warhammer.
Oh, yeah. The art is really kind of cute on this. I'm looking at their website. It looks like they were there last year as well, trying to just show off some real kind of early demo stuff. But you say there's they're planning a Kickstarter on this coming up soon?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I kind of forgot about the... Yeah, I have actually followed them on Facebook. I was just kind of waiting for the announcement of that Kickstarter because, yes, I've seen this before and was eager to get it and just been waiting for it to become available. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that back to my memory.
Yeah, there's just so many games. I mean, it's just... I don't know when people have time to play all these awesome games, because I sit there and I watch the different YouTube channels where they're showing stuff, or I see stuff that you guys are talking about, or somebody just passes something my way, and I'm just like, wow, I wish I had time to play even half this stuff, because, man, LARPing does sound pretty fun.
Doesn't it?
Gen Con's a huge trade-off. You can choose, like, hanging out with your friends, playing games, sleep, eating, and you're going to trade off between some of those things.
Yeah, yeah. So which one suffered for you? Was it sleeping or eating?
It's always sleep.
Yeah. What's the average time that you went to bed each night?
Oh, I mean, I got to bed at fairly reasonable times, but I was also getting up early because I always wanted to be totally ready to go to the hall by the time it opened at 10 a.m., so...
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean, it's not Gen Con unless you went to bed at 3 a.m. at least once.
Yeah.
Did you follow the 4-2-1 rule?
4-2-1?
I've always heard you need to follow the 4-2-1 rule if you go to Gen Con. You need to make sure to get at least 4 hours of sleep, 2 meals a day, and 1 shower every day. Because apparently there's been issues of people not doing such.
Yeah. Definitely there's lots of people who don't do one of those things.
What was there anything that you were really disappointed about? I mean, like you said, you've been going for 6 years now. Was there anything that was disappointing that you were expecting to have changed from previous years, or something that the convention didn't do that they had done in previous years?
That's a good question. You know, honestly, not that I can think of. It was a really good con for me this year. The one thing that has really improved over the years as I've gone to Gen Con is actually food trucks.
Oh, good.
When I first started going to Gen Con, those weren't a thing. And so trying to get your food in was always a nightmare, because every restaurant anywhere near the convention center was utterly packed all the time. Mm-hmm. But now there are these food trucks that's up all day, every day of the con. And so you can go rush, grab a meal that's relatively affordable and relatively good, and then get back to your important stuff of gaming.
75,000 people. Is the convention starting to run out of space?
Oh, it's ran out of space long ago. I looked today to try to book my hotel for next year.
Oh.
And there is no availability within like a mile of the hotel.
Damn. Wow.
Don't they hold those off?
A mile of the convention center.
I thought they really held those off until a specific day when...
So they do. They do this thing called the Gen Con Housing Lottery, and it is also a nightmare.
Yeah, I remember trying to do that like 3 years ago, just before I was laid off from NEW.
Right.
And yes, 2 years in a row I tried to go to Gen Con and wasn't able to.
Yeah.
Well, now you have no excuse for next year, Brian.
We'll see. Well, Nerdtacular, we'll see when that is.
No, you guys should definitely come. I think like it's a great, great time. Have either of you ever been?
No. Nope.
I have not. Rob has gone. Zach has gone. Rodrigo, I don't think, has gone, although he's close enough to
have
gone.
Those 2 years I tried to go, Rob went.
Oh, yeah.
That punk.
Yeah, I was really jealous that Zach went that year, because it's like, Zach, you're going? But Matthew hasn't gone. I think Matthew Bach has gone. Mm. But yeah, no, I'd like to go to that just sometime just to experience it, although I'm afraid I'd be too inundated with too much to do. Where's my time? That kind of stuff.
Kind of see that.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing I could recommend for your first time going to the con is make no plans.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I tend to not do that. Because they don't have panels or anything at Gen Con, do they?
Oh no, they definitely do, actually. Oh, okay. They have panels every year for, you know, game designers and reviewers and, you know, people. They have panels on running games, on developing games, on publishing games.
So. Ken and Robin could be probably talked about
stuff.
Well,
I was going to say, are they ever there at the show?
Yeah, they usually have a live Q&A there.
I wonder if anybody would be interested in Gen Con of us doing a Critical Hit panel.
I mean, they do a industry experts invites every year, and they have, like, you know, like I said, game reviewers and developers. And I would not be surprised at all if you reached out to them as a representative of Major Spoilers or of Critical Hit, and they gave us a spot.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah,
well, we will see. Really cool. I think we've kind of gone through everything on our list. Sam, is there anything else you wanted to touch on since you were there?
You know, one other game that I played that I really liked was called Seven Wonders Pantheon. Wonders Dual Pantheon. Sorry, it's a. So I don't know. Have either of you played Seven Wonders?
I'm familiar with the game. Nope. I haven't played it.
Well, it's a really neat game, also produced by Asmodee, and it is normally meant to be a very large player game. Seven Wonders sees typically seven players, and Duel is their miniature version of it, where they have it's a two-player game. And so this was actually new to me, even though the Duel game came out last year. And what I played this year was Duel with a expansion that hasn't been released yet, but will be fourth quarter of 2016, called Pantheon, where in addition to building these great wonders of the ancient world, you're also courting the favor of various ancient gods. So you have to, like, get favors from, you know, Ares and Poseidon, but also, like, Baal and I'm trying to think. There were a few other, like, Phoenician gods and Norse gods and things like that. So it's a competitive game, two-player, again, something that is nice for me to find in a game that works with that small scale, especially considering that it's a scaled-back version of such a large-scale game.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that sounds cool. Brian, did you have anything else that you wanted to mention that you thought about?
I was just curious on, was the lack of an official Dungeons & Dragons presence, did that really seem to impact anything? Or,
I mean, it's just kind of amazing to me the degree to which Paizo has taken over the presence that Wizards of the Coast and D&D used to have. I went to the Paizo room this year, and it was massive. There were they had a special, this was so brilliant, a Pathfinder Academy to teach little kids how to play Pathfinder.
Oh, cool. Cute. Now that is awesome.
Yeah,
that is so smart.
The con is super kid friendly. You see lots.
Oh, man, we've had a terrible connection tonight.
Oh, I have a terrible connection?
No, I said I think we have a terrible connection tonight. Just,
yeah. Oh. Yeah. You might repeat that last bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure. So the con is always really kid-friendly. You see lots of kids running around with their parents in costumes, sometimes matching costumes. Very cute. And but they always have special areas set aside for kids. A friend of mine said that she played in a game that was run by a 10-year-old.
Oh, neat. Oh. Neat.
It's wonderful.
Well, I know Brad has taken Brad's taken his family last year and says it's a lot of fun and everything. But yeah, I think that sounds like a great convention this year. Maybe next year we will try to pencil it in and see. Do you know the date for next year, Sam?
Oh, I just looked it up today. I believe it is going to be August 17th through 20th of next year.
Oh, boo. That's the worst time, because that's when school starts back up.
Okay.
Oh,
so, oh well, maybe we'll figure something out. I'll talk to the wife. Gotta be nice to her. I don't know if we can make two conventions though in one year.
Yeah, that's the big
issue. All right. Sam, thanks so much for stopping in for Munchkin Land this week. It's so valuable and so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where can people find more of your stuff?
The AV Club, and I do an annual, they call it, their game section is called Gameological, and they call it Gameological at Large is the name of the story. And so it's when we go out and visit cons and the things like that. So I believe August 24th is when you're going to have a whole write-up of all the games that I played that you can take a look at, and it'll have a nice condensed list for your shopping pleasures as these come out.
And I think you got cut off. That's over at the AV Club, correct?
.com, and that should be dropping around August 24th.
Excellent. And they can follow you on Twitter if anyone cares to follow you on Twitter.
Yep, at Samantha Nelson 1.
And Brian, thank you so much for being here once again. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you if they want to find more about you?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at DNDBrian, letter D, letter N, letter D, B-R-I-N. You can also
Y or
find-
I?
Okay. As in India. You can also find me at Tumblr at iceberg256.tumblr.com. Yeah, that's generally it. You can find me on Facebook if you look for it. You're going to have to just find out on your own if you really want to find me there.
There you go. All right, Brian, Sam, thank you so much. And listeners, thank you so much. And if you found some enjoyment in this and you want to see us to create some additional programming for you in the future, maybe play some more of these games, we'd appreciate it if you supported us on Patreon, patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can sign up for as little or as much as you want. And there's a bunch of rewards that come with your patronage. So we thank everyone for that. And until next time, remember, it's not cheating if you don't get caught.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.